rush this a little now, but okay. Basically, we collect and sort things, and that's usually a kind of conjunction that you call coordinating. Things like and. If you're just collecting, it sounds something like this. And think about what this does when you're just collecting and using a lot of and. And then we'll look at other things like or but. For now, all knew that it was indeed the ancient treasure chamber of Caer Paravel, where they had once reigned as kings and queens of Narnia. There was a kind of path up the middle, as it might be in a greenhouse, and along at each side at intervals stood rich suits of armor like knights guarding the treasures. Now listen, in between the suits of armor and on each side of the path were shelves covered with precious things, necklaces and arm rings and finger rings and golden bowls and dishes and long tusks of ivory, brooches and coronets and chains of gold and heaps of unset stones lying piled anyhow, as if they were marbles or potatoes, diamonds, rubies, carbuncles, emeralds, topazes, and amethysts. This whole pile of and. How do you feel with all the and 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 and? What does it do for you? Yes, it makes you feel this huge profusion. You can't even tell how much stuff there is with all these ants. Hemingway does this sometimes. Lewis is using it for wonder. This grand profusion, lots of and. Hemingway does it with and to assert equality among the ideas. And so he will tell you, and she spoke to him, and he looked at her, and he looked out the window, and it was raining. And her speaking to him, it raining, looking out the window, all have this equality to them. By the time Hemingway has given you a stretch of these things, you feel like everything is just about the same as everything else. And you get this feeling of blank despair. And that's what Hemingway's after, at a moment like that. Okay, so and, a lot of and put together would give you this assertion of equality. And you do that for all sorts of things. Or, you could write a paper, or you could give a presentation, or you can do a project, and they're all equal, right? You could, or, and that gives you a sense of choice. This is this collecting function of the coordinating conjunctions, which always have connections between things that are basically equal. One more example of and, just because I like it. Mark Twain on the rules of literary art. They require, these rules, that when the personages of a tale deal in conversation, the talk shall sound like human talk, and be talk such as human beings would be likely to talk in the given circumstances, and have a discoverable meaning, also a discoverable purpose, and a show of relevancy, and remain in the neighborhood of the subject at hand, and be interesting to the reader, and help out the tale, and stop when the people cannot think of anything more to say. But this requirement has been ignored from the beginning of the Deerslayer to the end of it. Okay. Once again, what are all those ands for? How do you feel about the writer of the Deerslayer by the time he's piled on? All of the, you smile, what do you think? Okay, again, a pile of things giving you an idea of profusion, lots of and. If you were just listing the things, it would have less of that kind of punctuating effect. Okay, and, or.
But,
and there's also
not.
These are actually logical operators. They are used
in search engines, you know, this or this or this and this or this and not this. And then you can narrow your search or widen your search. We do that because that's also the way we think.
What's different about these two?
I intended to give a lecture in Gorman A, but it was in Gorman C. What does that say about these two facts? They're different, they're divergent. Okay, they're taking me in two directions. Okay. So, we can collect things, we can sort things. Things that are different from each other, or things that are separable from each other. These we do among equals. Okay. There's another thing that we do with conjunctions. But this is one of the ways of connecting things. And there's a whole class of them. I should probably hand out a little thing for you on it, and I will in a little while. Let me point out that among the coordinating conjunctions are also some that are kind of bigger and fluffier. And usually, when you put the two parts of the sentence together, you'll put a semicolon before these. Things like, furthermore, likewise, moreover, or in this case, otherwise. So you have, these are part of a general class of things that don't mark well. No. Adversative. Happens a lot in my students' papers that people will give me one of these but things, and I'll read one side of the sentence. And I'll read the other side of the sentence. Because these are the kinds of things that you always put in the middles of things. So you have one side and the other. There's another kind of conjunction that you can use in other places, but this is in the middles. And I'll look at the one side, I'll look at the other. I'll say, I don't see how that disagrees with this. If you use one of these, make sure there's something in which the two sides disagree. Otherwise, you'll just confuse us. And it's disappointing. And, yeah. So this is actually the one that gets misused most, and you all know what it means. Just pay attention when you're making a connection. Between the things, two are connecting. All right. Let's go back here. Okay, now, there are some conjunctions that aren't just one word, and most of them are coordinating, like this. Either I tell you what a conjunction is or I don't. Either or. Okay. Neither and nor. Okay. They have space between them, but they're really part of the same word idea. And you've got to make sure that you don't pull them apart and start doing things like both also. No. Not only, but also. If and then go together nicely. Whether or. Okay. These are called correlative. If and then, don't quite. Now, there's a second way that we connect things in sentences. In fact, within this, subordinating conjunctions. There'll be two kinds. One really kind of tells you what things, or give you an opportunity to use a sentence or an idea as a part of a sentence. Okay. Like a subject or an adjective, and I'll show you some of that. Or a logical relationship. Ideas that really could be sentences on their own. Let me give you an example of the first of these. A gentleman is one who never hurts anyone's feelings unintentionally. That's Oscar Wilde. Okay. A gentleman is one. That's a sentence, but it's a really boring sentence because one doesn't really have a lot to it. Just one. Okay. So you're going to tell us what kind of one. And that makes this an adjective. Who never hurts anyone's feelings unintentionally. Well, who stands there for a noun. Really. But it refers back to the sentence. So, a gentleman is one who never, that who. Tells you about this gentleman. Who's the same thing as the one, because the is has asserted that. Okay, so we have these things which connect, or which take ideas and turn them into parts of sentences. Now, other things that do that are words like that and which. There's a big difference between these two. Let me stop here with that. Okay. That he studies why isn't that a sentence? If I did that, this, it would work as a sentence. He studies. Why isn't it a sentence as soon as I add something to it?
If I do any of that, I take what was a perfectly respectable sentence and turn it into a sad little orphaned dependent clause that needs something to depend on. Now, what does it depend on? Maybe if I just give it let's see.
Does that help?
No, you're right. It's still an orphan dependent clause. As soon as you put one of these conjunctions in front of one of these things, you've made it dependent. It's like, you've taken away its income. It's dependent. You need the other half of the clause. So what do you need here? What's the other half that you need? An independent clause. A clause that can stand on its own and do its own thing. Now, coordinating conjunctions have a couple of independent clauses, and if you pull out the coordinating conjunction, there are independent clauses, and if you are independent clauses, they're really sentences. This will never be a sentence, as long as it's got that connected to it. As soon as you do this, that he studies English, I know. That works. That's a sentence. You can't say, I know and he studies English. Or that he studies English and I know. I'm really taking this and making it part of the sentence. However, what's the subject of this sentence as a whole?
I.
I indeed. Okay. And what's the main verb?
No.
I knew that. I know. And there's an object. What's the object? That's the whole idea, that he studies English. So we have here this object, which is an idea. Once I do that, or that, or that, or that, in front of an idea, I'm saying, this is just a part of a sentence. It might be an adjective, it might be the object, it could be the subject, but it's not the whole sentence. As soon as I put one of those in front of it, I can move that chunk around, because ordinarily, you could say, I know that he studies English. But if I move him around, it's still fine. Coordinated conjunctions stay in the middle between the things they're connecting. But these kind, that are really telling you about this logical relationship, the idea isn't in which piece comes next. It's a little higher up there in there's a relationship among these two ideas. And so I can put the ideas in any order, and the words tell me what the relationship are. So it's possible to do more complicated logical things with this stuff than it is with this stuff. This stuff is fun stylistically, and often really fun stylistically. But if you want to make an argument, these sorts of things, these subordinating conjunctions, are the important kinds of things to use.
Okay. So what kinds of logical relationships do we assert?
All right. Put the coordinating conjunctions in the middle. It's nice, but has some difficulties.
Okay. Let me think about grammar here. Those would begin subordinate clauses. Whoever came to this lecture is getting extra credit. I'm actually not sure whether that's the case. Some of you seem to not in a sense, but I presume that it may be. I'm establishing a class. Whoever is human is mortal. We're back to the thing that they always use in logic classes to start, you know, Socrates is human, Socrates is mortal. This is a logical class. That's a logical class. And you're saying, I'm establishing a logical class, and this will be part of the idea that the rest of the sentence will take care of. Now, these don't necessarily establish logical classes, but okay. There are things like when and after. Or before. Or since. What are these words about?
Time.
Yes.
Okay. There are other things. Time.
What you're talking about when you're talking about time. Time does have to do with a relation. It has to do with a relation of action, of motion. You don't think of time when you think of just a thing. You think of time when you think of an action. These have to do with verbs. So they have to do with the whole idea of the other half of the sentence, because really, you know, a sentence is its verb. When you have the verb, you got most of what's going on. I can say, go! And that's a sentence. I can say, stop! And that's a sentence. But I can't say, marker! And have it really be a sentence. So these things are actually a little bit more powerful than some of these things, because they're going to assert a relationship between an idea and the main thing going on in the other sentence. That also happens with the logical ones, like because. Or this. What happened with this? And all of its cousins. Because, whether, whereas, although. So these establish logical class. And so they're usually functioning as a kind of noun. Whoever does this. Use it as a subject, you use it as a verb. But it's also got this argument in it, this syllogism kind of buried in it. These things are establishing a relationship between one action and another action. because of this action, something else is going on. Because you came here, you're getting that extra credit, right? Because. Although he came here, he didn't get the extra credit. What kind of a relationship is that?
Is there something on the board that might...
But.
Yeah, it's like this, but it's an adversative relationship. So though, and although, and among coordinating conjunctions, things like nevertheless, and however, okay.
They carry the argument. So when you have ideas in a paper and you're going, you know, I have this idea, I have that idea, I have this idea, I have that idea, then if you look at the relationships among ideas, you can start to sort them. And rather than sort of randomly scattering connective words around the paper, which sometimes happens to my distress, start to look at, what's the relationship? What am I trying to say? Is this happening before that? Is it happening because of that? Is it happening in spite of that? Which is another one of these. Have these different kinds of conjunctions, these subordinate conjunctions. It's because if you don't use them that, if you don't use them, what you get is like that pile of unset stones lying piled anyhow as if they were marbles or potatoes. You may have lots and lots and lots of good ideas, but they're in a jumble, like, you know, potatoes. Pour them out of a... Now, the subordinating conjunctions, slice them up and put them in a casserole. Okay? You get them cooked. You know where you're going with them. Okay? So, let's see. And you can do much more complicated things. Actually, I think my notes on the front about this are vague and silly, but the quotations on the back that I found are good. So
can you pass it up to the
Because this is where writing gets to be actually a way of thinking. Going to take something from an 18th century writer, Samuel Johnson. Yeah, go to the side, not the side where I was making my vague notes, but the side where I have all these quotations. And say, a state of innocence and happiness. Notice, innocence and happiness, he's got a nice coordinating conjunction, is so remote from all that we have ever seen. Okay. All that we have ever seen. So that we have ever seen is one of these subordinating conjunctions that's being used as an adjective. Okay. That. Okay. That works back to the is. Though we can easily conceive it possible, and may therefore hope to attain it, yet our speculations upon it must be general and confused. It's got a lot of conjunctions there, doing a lot of stuff. Oh, here's another adversative conjunction, right? It's among the coordinating ones. Okay. What's he saying? Let's look at the logical relationships among things. Okay, I guess that's my signal for analyzing it myself. Okay. You have this first idea. State of innocence and happiness is remote, and then you've got a whole bunch of things that come after the word remote. From all that we have ever seen, the subordinating conjunction. That, though we can easily conceive it possible, and may, therefore, there's another of these conjunctions, therefore. What does therefore mean? On each side, you've got argument, and therefore is a conclusion. So is thus. Don't do that without a conclusion. Okay. Might therefore hope to attain it. So he's got, we can conceive it, may hope to attain it, therefore, because we can conceive it. Oh, we're out on an intellectual limb here, right? Yet, our speculations upon it must be general and confused. He's saying, when we speculate about innocence and happiness, we're likely to be general and confused about it. And what's the middle of the sentence like? After he gets to remote, what happens? What? Look at what he's doing. He's saying our ideas are remote from innocence and happiness. Remote from understanding innocence and happiness. There are ideas at the end of the sentence. There's innocence and happiness at the beginning of the sentence. What's he doing in the middle?
He's using adversatives,
using all of these things to show us exactly how the remoteness comes about, and making them remote. It's cool to watch. Johnson is particularly good at this. If you ever go into the moral essays of Johnson and start looking at what he's doing with his grounds, well, these things that are balanced, and he'll have all these things that are building up to something. And he's using these conjunctions and these subordinations in order to build an argument along with building your feelings about the other. That's the kind of thing that you can do once you get to know how to use these things. You use them for the argument, and then you take another step and use them to the start. Take another master approach, John Henry Newman, just for a moment. I am not proposing to set forth arguments which issue in the belief of these doctrines. So, which issue in the belief of these doctrines? Notice he's using which here. Which is one of those things here's something that'll work. Which you can't use in the place of that. You can use that in most places. You can use which. I know, I'll be done in a minute or two, but I got here late. You can't say which he studies English, I know.
Which refers to a thing. That can refer to a thing, but it also can just sort of be the thing. Like, give me that. I can't say, give me which.
Doesn't work.
That's why you don't use which as your
noun.
So let's see what Newman says.
To investigate what it is to believe in them, what it is to believe in them, what the mind does, what it contemplates, when it makes an act of faith. So he plays you three times with what, and then he comes around to when. Watch how people use these to take you places emotionally. What? When it makes an act of faith. And the sentence rounds out in this satisfying way. He's going toward talking about faith. After all of these little bits that talk about doubt.
There are other good things to say about conjunctions. This is kind of a start. I do want to point out one other thing. The last line on the half of the paper that has my vague notes on it. Logical conclusion. You use these when you have said everything that proves your point. It's 3:17. 3:15 was supposed to be the end of this time. Thus, therefore, hence, consequently, accordingly, I conclude. Off you go.